I was born on the 29th of November 1924. My name is George, but the Germans spell it without the E on the end. Navratzky, Navratzki. So somewhere my father or grandfather were Polish, because we lived near the Polish border, and half of the Yiddish population in this little place. We only were about 5 miles or so away from Poland. Half the Yiddish population were Poles, you know, so they couldn't speak Germany, they spoke Yiddish.
Yes.
You know?
And where were you born? What was the name of it?
Ostpreußen, East Prussia, which is now Poland. After the Second World War became Poland, the little place is called Gilgenburg. Gilgenburg, G-I-L-G-E-N-B-U-R-G, Gilgenburg.
And do you have any idea how many people lived there in total, do you think?
Not very many. It wasn't a big, it was just a small, I mean, we didn't have electricity, paraffin lamps, we never saw a motor car, horses.
And have you any idea how many Jewish people lived there? Was it hundreds or less?
A lot of families, and as I say, the majority were Polish. I would say there would be over 100. Over
100 Jewish people?
Oh yeah, more than that. There was a lot of big families.
Okay,
know.
And what were your parents' names?
My father's name was Navratzky.
And his first name?
Nathan.
Nathan Navratzky.
And my mother's name was Alma Salomonzon.
Salomonzon, so how would you spell that?
Salo, S-A-L-O-S-O-H-N.
Okay, and he grew up in this little town?
Well, I stayed with my grandparents till I was 9. My mother worked in the town with a Jewish gentleman who was really very rich. She owned a lot of property, businesses, and she worked there, done the cooking, and she used to serve in the shop when the Poles came in on a Friday market day. She could speak Polish.
Yes.
Picked it up, serving the Poles. And with my grandmother died, we moved from the little place where my mother lived, my grandfather and I, and we stayed there till, well, Kristallnacht, and then all started, you know.
And what was the other place called that you moved to?
Johannesburg. It's called Pischnau, P-I-S-Z-S, Pisch. I've got the names all... Yeah, but I can't mind them.
No, don't worry. Uh-huh. Don't worry. So you moved there after your grandmother died. So you moved with your grandfather. And
I moved to my mother's place, which was maybe 30, 40 miles away, something like that.
And that's where your mother had grown up?
I was there till I was, 13, you know, because you weren't allowed to take anything out of the country. I mean, you could be a millionaire. All you were allowed is a suitcase.
If I could just take you back a little bit, when you were growing up in this town that your mother had come from, and you went to school there, presumably.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about what life was like in the town for somebody who was Jewish at this time? Would this be the early 30s?
When I was at school?
Yes.
Well, number one, you were in a class and you passed all the exams, but they didn't put you up to the next level, kept you in the same level all the time. Yeah. Also, you had to sit yourself at the very back, you know.
Yes.
And then eventually you couldn't go. Well, when my mother left, my grandfather and I went to the capital of East Prussia, which is Königsberg. It's called Kaliningrad now.
Yes.
It's the Russians got it because it's a naval base.
Yes. Again, taking you back, when you were at school, were there many other Jewish children at school?
Yes, there were quite a lot. My father got a photograph of the group, the Haida group. But I was only, with different levels, obviously.
Yes.
I was the only one in that class, but there were brothers and sisters and what have you in all different classes.
Did you have other brothers and sisters?
I had a half-brother who was 10 years older than me. Now, he was learning the trade. He had to go to some big town to learn the trade, and he became a tailor, ladies and gents tailor, so I've got a name Taylor, because when he came out, my mother got myself out and she got my brother out. What happened was that eventually you couldn't go to the normal school, so you had to go to the Yiddish schools.
Yes.
And they only had a few. So the one in Kaliningrad, Königsberg, the capital of East Prussia, you just went to the Yiddish school. But then they got shifted me to Hanover because you went to school in the morning, you worked in the fields in the afternoon, and you're supposed to go to Palestine.
Yeah, was it through a Zionist group?
So, as I say, my mother got out, she got me out. I came out on the 25th of July, 1939.
Okay, and how did it work? Did she know for a while that she was trying to leave, or that she wanted to leave, and that you were going to leave?
No, just had to take a chance, you know. As I said, you couldn't come out unless somebody would sponsor you.
But how did it work? How did you get your sponsorship? How did you make somebody know that...
I came with the children's transport.
You came with the kinder transport?
Written to 10,000 children.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, how did that work? Did the Jewish community publicise this scheme amongst the community? Or how did people know who could leave, for instance? Who was making up the list of people to leave? Or do you remember? You were too young. And I also wanted to ask you, you mentioned your mother. Was your father not living at that time?
Yes, but I never saw my father. My father actually died in Dachau, in a camp.
Okay.
You know?
But he was living with you in these towns that you mentioned.
Yeah. Yes. As I said, I never met my father, you know?
Do you know what kind of work that your father did?
Your mother mentioned he had a little sort of grocery shop going somewhere in Germany. But then I've got some people and friends made research on the computer and they found out that Nathan Navratsky was in Berlin. I always understood he was still in East Prussia, you know.
Yes. And so, do you know when your mother came, roughly?
I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't know. But it must have been shortly after. I'm only guessing, but... Yes. Kristallnacht in November, December. She's probably been out in the beginning of the following year, I would think, you know, 1939, very beginning, maybe even the end of 38.
Can I ask if you had a bar mitzvah? I
mean, a bar mitzvah in Germany, yes.
Can you remember it? I mean,
yes, I've still got my talus.
Have you really?
No, not a talus, my
tefillin, yes.
And with a bag with a date on it.
Uh-huh.
I knew you hunt for it. I don't know where I hid it.
What year was your bar mitzvah?
Well, when I was 13. I was 38. I don't know the date, but I even still got my speech and everything.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, did you say that was in Hanover, your bar mitzvah?
No, my bar mitzvah was in Johannesburg.
In Johannesburg.
And I was still 13.
That's right.
And then Kristallnacht started.
Was it in the Jewish Institute?
No. Of course, I was an annex to the shul.
Yes.
Of course, I remember they used to have a snooker table in, they had shows, they had theatre, they had whatever going, you know.
So you were there during the war years, you know. You had a different experience from most of the Jews in Europe. So what was it like being in Glasgow during the war?
Well, what happened during the war is, like my mother got my brother out. He came over the day the war started. He just got married, he was 24, got married in Hanover, and he's supposed to go to Israel as well. And his wife, she came from the same town where he stayed, in a village where we stayed. And he was on a boat crossing the British Channel to come to Britain when war was declared. But it was a Dutch boat, so it managed to carry, if it was a German Buddha went back. So he came to Glasgow and got fixed up and got a job, you know.
What was his name?
His was Walter, but it was my half-brother. His name was Salomon Zoon, like my mother's maiden name.
Okay,
Salomon. I never found out why, what, no, whatever. You know, he didn't ask and they never said, my mother never said anything, my brother never said anything, and I never sort of... In later years, you see, why didn't I ask what happened? Why? My father couldn't have been that far away. Why did he not come and see us? You know? So, never found out any details. So my brother was, by that time, he was a trained ladies and gents tailor, and he worked people like my brother and my friends who came over, and when the war started, they got interned because the Germans sent through a lot of spies for the Yiddish people. So they interned them off Isle of Man. Now, my brother was working in Queen Street with Levi in Queen Street making British army coats. They interned him, right? So once you were in the camp in the Isle of Man, they interrogate you and they say, okay, his grandfather, his uncle, his nephews and cousins, they're all still over there. He's not going to sabotage the British effort, war effort. So he says, do you want to join the Pioneer Corps? So he joined the army and he was in there all during the war. He was back in Germany during the war.
So when you look back, you've lived in two different countries, and you must reflect a lot about how, you know, life has changed for you. And you were fortunate, weren't you? You were fortunate.
Going back to Kristallnacht now, as I said, on the 9th of November 1938 was just my mother, my grandfather and I, when she worked with that Jewish person. And the Nazis came, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever time it was in the morning. There were about 3 or 4 in a brown uniform. Now, my grandfather had an ulcer on his leg and was an open wound. The man was in agony, nothing he could do about it, and he didn't have treatment. All he was getting powder to put on his open wound. It was in the 70s. And they took every Jewish man, they took my grandfather away. Right. They're going to take me, and my mother grabbed me and put me behind her back, and she says, you can't take him, he's going to school in the morning. Now the Nazis left me, although I was only 13, and I was only in November, 9th November, my birthday's on the 29th, so it was coming on for 14. They left me. Now if they had taken me away, he would never have came back. But my grandfather came back. There was no use to them. But nobody else had the Yiddish men returned home again. And that's when they started moving, you know.
Yes.
Now, the person my mother worked for in a big town, as I said, very religious. He had no family. I called him uncle. He owned property, streets. That's how we had a room. And we had a room. Yes. Each. My grandfather and I had a room. My mother had a room. Yes. And she worked, done the cooking and that. And she helped us Friday when the Poles came over. Friday was market day, so the Poles used to come over with their horses and their wagons and sell all the fruit and what. Then used to go to my mother's, where my mother worked in the shop, and buy the fruit for the next week, till the next week. So in the winter, we were beside the water. In the winter, instead of the Poles coming with the wagons around the water, it was all frozen up. So he used to come across with the sledges, you know. So this gentleman who owned all that property, the Nazis came one day and took him away. And the very same minute, he got a Nazi in his 30s, got the whole caboodle. Now, I can't remember if it was weeks or a month later. I mean, that man was only in his tomb. Well, I'm thinking about it now. He must have been in his maybe 45, 50, something like that. He came back, supposed to be him, in a lead coffin, sealed. Don't know if he was in there or not. I always remember seeing the lead coffin. Now, I don't understand why people didn't realise that they're going to have a war coming, because just shortly before all this, there was a big, massive German manoeuvre at the Polish border. They were sussing it all out.
Yes.
Nobody ever thought.
Nobody thought.
They're sussing the place out to invade Poland.
You came over straight to Glasgow?
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And was your mum there to meet you when you came?
No, she wasn't.
No.
That's another wee story. As I said, you're only allowed to take 10 shillings, no matter what you had. One suitcase, right? And you packed as much as you can, and you have coats in there. So anyway, on a journey up, now you must remember, I couldn't speak a word of English. I couldn't even say yes, no, nothing, right? So the gentleman who was in charge of the transfer to Kinder, he says, you got 10 German marks, give me it, and I'll change it for English money. So I gave him it, and I'm still waiting for it to come back. I had done a few bob, or I was too shy to ask for my money back, you know.
What languages could you speak?
Only Yiddish and German. And, well, Hebrew, at that time, I've forgotten my Hebrew now, but I could translate the Hebrew into German, obviously, because I used to Heide after every school, every afternoon, you went to Heide. So anyway, I arrive at Harwich, and the immigration office, as I said, there was 150 children with the transport, and everybody was going to different places, and there I'm sitting, the only one that's left. So the immigration officer took me home to London, put me up, sent a telegram to my mother. She stayed in 28 Abbotsford Place. She had a room there. A young brother and sister owned the flat. So sent a telegram to my mother that I'm going to arrive the following morning at Glasgow railway station. Okay, so get to Glasgow, come off the train, a suitcase, my jack boots noch, and I go down to the, you know, like a potke. Everybody's away from me. I'm standing there on my own. What am I going to do? I've not a pen in my pocket. I can't say yes or no. You don't see a policeman to see her. You know, you were still sort of cowed because he used to throw stones at you and shout and swear, whatever, you know. So I'm standing, everybody's away, and this guy comes over, this man comes over, and he spoke Yiddish to me. It was a taxi driver. You know, 10 million to one chance.
Yes.
I must have stood out, obviously. I'm the only one standing with my jack boots off.
Yes.
So he came over and spoke Yiddish to me. I says, well, mother's supposed to meet me here. She's not here. He says, he's going to take me in this taxi to you. I says, no girl. He says, it's all right. So he takes me to 28 Abbotsford Place, two stairs up, chaps the door, and the lady who owned it, the brother, the lady opened the door. Obviously, she couldn't mistake me. She knew who I was, you know. She says to come in. Took me into my mother's room. My mother's sitting in a chair, taking her shoes off, her boots, whatever. She went to Queen Street Station. I came at Central Station. I saw me standing there for the taxi driver. I mean, that's unbelievable. But I was clever enough to have a bit of paper with my mother's address on it.
Okay, so you arrived in 20 Abbotsford Place, and did you stay there when you came?
Yeah, I stayed there, and then they arranged a job for me. Maybe I was just in Glasgow, maybe 1 or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they arranged a job for me at a Jewish firm, Behrman Brothers, at Ritchie Street. It's only recently they pulled the building down. It was a furniture place. They're making wardrobes and get like tables and things like that. And I worked there for a wee while, because I could converse with them. They spoke Yiddish. There were three brothers, you know. I worked with them for a while.
So what did you think of Scotland when you came? You were brought up in a small...
Oh, it's completely different, you know.
Yeah.
Number one, as soon as you... Tea with milk in it, you know, it's never heard of. Lemon tea, yes, but never know. But then, of course, when you come to Britain, you look out the window in the train. Always remember a lot of green fields and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how quick you pick up the language, you know.
So what about the Jewish community? Did you start to mix with the Jewish community? Did you make friends?
Oh yes, I joined the Maccabi. I was in the Maccabi in Germany, in Königsberg. We didn't have a Maccabi, but when I got to Königsberg, because I enjoyed my sports in the schools, so I went to the Maccabi.
Whereabouts was Maccabi in Glasgow?
Turriff Street. I've still got an original badge.
Yes.
And photographs. And Laurie, my pal, he's got a few photographs of the Maccabi, you know. It was just a wooden hut.
Was it next to the Talmud Tower?
Next to the Talmud Tower, the ground.
It was a hut?
It was just a wooden hut.
Okay.
And a great time. We used to go there about 2-3 times a week. run a gym team. We used to get displays and everything.
Who was your pal? You mentioned a name. Who was your pal?
Well, there was Laurie Sless, Harry Matavsky. He owns a tyre place. You know him, no? Mm. Fieldman, A.B. Fieldman, the young dentist. He died when he was only in his 20s. Ellis, instructor. He was an instructor in the army, and then when he came out, he took the class. And unfortunately, he was only in this very fit, powerful guy. Went to dance in the plaza and just died, collapsed on the floor. He was so fit, unbelievable.
So how long did you stay in Abbotsford Place? Did your mum ever move on to get her own place?
Oh, yes.
Where did you stay then?
In South Portland Street.
Oh, right.
You never left the Gorbals.
You never left the Gorbals. So your mum was working in the Jewish Institute. What do you remember about the Jewish Institute? I mean, we hear so much about the Jewish Institute.
I didn't go to it because although we stayed across the road,
But also during the war, obviously you mixed with non-Jewish people as well.
Uh-huh.
Did you feel self-conscious about speaking with a German accent, or what they would have seen as a German accent and that kind of thing?
No, did people give you, no problem.
What stage were you at when the war ended? Were you still working?
I was driving German for a Hollisch contractor.
Yes.
That was my sort of last job. But I don't sort of remember details about it. But
and when the war ended, were there family that you had left in Europe, you know, cousins or aunts and uncles? Were you?
Yes, well, yeah.
Did you know what had happened to them? Or?
Yeah. I remember when my mother mentioned that my father got... No, my father was in the German army in the First World War. And as I say, she got a note. Always stuck my mind that he got killed in Dachau. So anything, any business, anything, I left it to my mother.
Can you tell me, you mentioned your wife before, where did you meet your wife?
At that club in
the refugee club?
Yeah.
And what was your wife's name?
Roseanne Kent. She wasn't Jewish.
Uh-huh.
That's another story.
But she was at the refugee club. Uh-huh. So where was the refugee club open to?
Oh, anybody over there. A lot of communist people used to go up there.
Yes?
Yes. It's a place to go to. The cafe's shut at 9:30. So did the pubs, actually.
And what time was the refugee club open till?
Well, we came out of Locarno. My
open.
Pal and I at 11.
And it was still
and
open.
The time we walked up to Tocky Hall Street, it was still open.
It was still open.
And my wife's mother was in the kitchen making the tea now. And my wife, she was only 15. She told me a lie. She said she was 18. Never told me the truth since.
And when did you get married? When did you get married?
1951.
Good. And so you were in the Territorial Army, and did you ever encounter anti-Semitism when you were in the Territorial Army?
Oh, yes. Because we were in Germany, and I was driving the truck, and I had some boys with me doing some job, and the boy said, we need fags going in the pub. I said, okay. So you take bits out of the engine so that they can nick the car. So the boys went in to pack the car, the truck, and I walked in, and there was two young German boys sitting at the bar, you know, and I walked in, and I could hear them. They were slagging the British Army.
Yes.
They didn't know I heard them when I came in. So I went behind them, went like that. I says, look, I says, in German, I says, we beat you twice in the war. So I says, shut up. There were certain places in the town we weren't allowed to go there. They were still hanging about with jackboots and all that, you know.
In Germany.
So did anyone give you support? Did anyone help you to settle into Scotland?
Oh,
anyone
really,
in the Jewish community?
No, I done my own thing, you know. Yeah. I mixed with the... When I started to work, my boss says, this guy was about 6 feet odds, a couple of years older than you. He says, this is Big Alec, and he stays next street to you, Warwick Street. He says, you can go home with him. He says, and he'll introduce you to the workers. Take me around the factory. Well, they had ladies, there were three women there, a young girl and two elderly ladies who'd done all the French polishing to the furniture. And he says, he'll introduce you to all the workers. Well, what did I know? He says, made me understand that of like saying hello, how do you do? He says, I have to say this, right? So still used to clicking your heels and bowing. I'm going around the one, he says, blah, blah, you know. And I'm saying, well, well, he told me to, I copied him, right? And all, they're all laughing and smiling. I says, that's a nice crowd. I wouldn't like to tell you what he told me to tell him. A bloody swear word. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, this is, oh, they're nice people, you know.
So yeah, did you continue wonderful. Working with that firm, or did you do something else later?
I was with them for quite a while, and then somebody, one of my friends who was came over from Germany as well. By that time I was about 18, 19, something like that. And he says, I was earning, what, 7 shillings a week for $48. You worked on a Saturday morning, you got an extra sixpence. So religion sort of fell away a bit. Well, it fell away a lot, but my mother was very religious, so I had to go to shul just even to see her, are you okay, you know. Sometimes she was the only lady was in the upstairs in the shul, you know. Used to fast all day long, and Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. So he says, I'm driving this motor, he says, and I'm getting £3 a week. I says, well, that's for me. So I went to lorry driving, you know.
Were you able to drive before you came? Did you learn to drive?
No. During the war, you did not sit a test because there was petrol rations. And you just went and got a driving license, that was you. Well, I was 15 at the time, 14, 15, when I started working in a factory, the first job. And they had a little trailer where they used to put wardrobes in and tables, and we used to... I went out with the driver who was only 18, I was 14, and he carried a wardrobe or something upstairs, and he was getting 3 pence. Oh, that's extra, because a shilling a week did me. Out of the 7 shillings, my mother got 6, I got up 1 shilling, do the pictures twice a week, 3 pence each, you know. Well, upstairs in the pallet, in the gobbles, he went upstairs. Downstairs was 4 pence, upstairs was 3 pence.
Yes.
But you're better upstairs, because if you're sitting down there, when they were finished smoking the cigarettes, they didn't tip them, they just flicked them over.
So after the war, did you eventually change jobs?
Oh, yeah. What did you also do? What actually happened is, all my friends from the Maccabi...
Yes, you were too young.
The recruiting office was at Moffat Street,
yes.
Where Fred Weiss factory is. Yes. You know Fred, no?
No, no,
not even. Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. Well, I worked for him for 11 years as well, in the factory, yeah. Uh-huh. So it's a couple of years since I saw Fred. He's no well at all now.
So you went to the Army Cadets and this kind of thing, and then you came back? You
know, it wouldn't have me.
No.
So I went to Govan, to the Navy.
Yes.
Passed my medical. I've still got my medical card. Yes. I'm still waiting for them to call me up. But I was working with Fred, actually. We had his own business by then. And two of the workers came in. See, I was always interested to become a motor mechanic. I was fast, yes. You know. I could drive, but didn't know a thing. As I was saying, when I went out with that guy delivering, the boy was 18, I was 14. I says, what do you do this and that? He says, well, have a shot. Up and down, have a place, no problem. You know?
Yes.
So I went to Jessness Garage in Tantallon Road.
Yes.
I had 2 brothers owned the garage.
Yes.
And I went over, I says, by that time I was a bit, 16, 17, something like that. I says, I would like a job as an apprentice, you know. He says, okay, we'll start you, but you could not start. You had to get permission from a labour exchange.
Right.
So I went up and saw them. I says, I can get a job. I can get a job in the garage. He says, okay. He says, you can have the job if a Scottish boy doesn't get it. If a Scottish guy would apply for the job, he would get it. Understandable. Before me, never heard of him. Nobody ever got a job. So I was working with Fred, and it was lunchtime, and 2 of the guys came in who were working beside me, and they said, we joined the Royal Engineers in Argyll Street. By that time, I was in my 30s, you know. So he showed me the thing, and says, they're looking for mechanics. So I went up to Berkeley Street, right? And a funny thing, working in the bedding place, dirty. Not now, I suppose, all machinery, but everything was hand-stitched and hand-made.
And you have family?
Five children. My oldest son died at 42, mm-hmm. about 12 years ago. I had twin girls and another daughter and a son in London, a young son.
And when did you move to Hamilton?
1986, when my wife died.
Okay.
I moved to my daughter.
Before that, where did you live?
Before that, I stayed in Kelvindale.
Kelvindale.
On Great Western Road. Uh-huh.
You're one of the examples of Jews who came to Scotland. Mm. A little bit of your story on the wall. And also, there's a little bit, I think, about you in the Kindertransport book, the Book of Memories that Rosa
Saccharin done. And years later, I've sort of tried to trace the family because, pardon me, I've got a son in London. I went to London and I went to the Red Cross and I gave him all the information because during the war you'd only correspond through the Red Cross. He's got an official Red Cross sheet of paper. My mother wrote to my... She still had a brother, an older brother living there in Germany. And my grandfather was still there. Then they ended up in the old age home, and that's it. Then the letter was sent to whoever, and I came back maybe weeks, months later with the reply on the other side, and I could recognise my grandfather's handwriting, you know. And then things stopped, obviously. But then she mentioned that she got word that from her oldest brother, who also was in the German army, doing no harm to the family, except the older, he had three children. So the oldest boy was 2 years older than me, and he ended up in Argentina. So what happened during the school days, in the holidays, they were only maybe an hour or so away in the train. So my mother used to put me on the train up to the big town, bigger town than we stayed in, and see my uncle. The boy was 2 years older than me, the girl was 2 years younger than me, and that wee boy wasn't even at school. And they used to come over to my mother and visit as well on holidays. So I went to the Red Cross in London and gave him the dates, the ages roughly, and the address. And for 2 years they couldn't trace anything. So I went to one of the meetings. And a week later, I saw a lady in the shopping centre in Giffnock, and she says, blah, blah, blah. I says, yeah, I'm trying to trace. She says, well, go and speak to Mr. So-and-so in the Maccabi. So I saw the lady, I can't even mind the name now. I saw the lady, and I gave her the old address and that. Within a month, I got a letter from Argentina. They traced the oldest boy.
Your cousin?
Uh-huh. What happened was that he got married over there. He had twin girls and a son got killed in a car accident. The twin girls, at that time, were in their 40s. It's about 6 years ago now. So, sorry, last time I was there was 10 years ago. The reason they traced it is one of the twin girls never got married. She still had a maiden named Salomon's own. So off I went to Argentina. But a cousin died, 20 odd years now, and she died. But I met the two girls and a lot of friends, still correspond with them, you know.
That's good.